This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Again, thanks for the opportunity to speak with you. And I will say, just to give credit, because I've been in multiple institutions, and as to Dr. Carroll's point, there is no program quite like this that's so integrative among so many different specialties. And so I will be focused on talking about how we approach radiation therapy for local recurrences, either after surgery or radiation. And again, this is a multidisciplinary discussion I have with my colleagues here at UCSF. A question I often get is, you know, why did my cancer come back if it's been treated before, right? And here are some basic risk factors I usually discuss with patients that we've known about for quite some time. So, for example, you heard, if you were here this morning, with Dr. Cornelia Ding's talk on pathology and how aggressive we call these the grade. And so I have a picture here of, you know, something that we call Gleason 3, where the cells are a little more uniform, to something that's called Gleason 5, and these cells are very aggressive. Well, we just know these are tend to be a little more treatment resistant and prone to coming back either in the radiation area or in the surgical zone. The next two slides pictures I have there are of MRIs, similar to what Dr. Baer showed earlier about prostate cancer and the utility of MRIs. Is, you know, when prostate cancers like to kind of extend beyond their capsule, right? This kind of means that they're a little more aggressive. Now, to be clear, that doesn't mean it's metastasized. This is a local phenomenon, right? But often what we see at the time of surgery, there might be a little extra capsular extension that wasn't even seen on the MRI. In this figure, it's pretty obvious. I kind of outlined the prostate there in red. And the arrow was where I kind of point the prostate cancer bulging a little bit on that left side in the kind of dark figure, right? The figure next to it is about seminal vesicle involvement. And some people ask me, like, what is a seminal vesicle? Well, just as a very quick recap, if your prostate's like a head, I always say the seminal vesicles are sort of the bunny ears that lie on top of it, right? And so prostate cancer loves to head in that particular direction upwards. And we also know that even with radiation or surgery, this is a risk factor for cancer coming back in that target zone, right? The last, I guess, risk factor is more surgically oriented, right? And some people ask me, what is a positive margin? How did this happen? Well, when a surgeon goes in and tries to remove your prostate, as Dr. Carroll says, with improved fluorophores, this might change. But sometimes, without recognizing, there could be a little bit of that cancer left behind. So in figure A, we have, you know, for example, a tumor coming out with normal tissue around it, where a pathologist will say, oh, look at this lie, there's tumor, and then surrounded by tissue. That's what we would hope for. In figure B there, on the kind of the bottom of that figure, unfortunately, they kind of cut through the cancer, and on the other side of that specimen, you would assume there's a little bit of cancer left. Now, I always tell people that just because you have a positive margin doesn't necessarily mean that something might come back. Not all positive margins are made the same. There's size and grade that you have to think in the clinical context. I think a lot of this got discussed, but I'll just kind of go through my evaluation of how we look at local recurrences. So, for example, I usually start with a PSMA PET-CT, kind of working my way outwards. As Dr. Brehm mentioned, this is great at catching distant recurrences that we've never seen previously at much lower PSAs and, you know, somewhere between even as low as 0.2. I showed an example in this figure, actually, of a gentleman who went through radiation therapy up front. Many years ago, his PSA rose to that kind of Phoenix definition, but to also Dr. Carroll's point, I think most of us now don't wait to hit that Phoenix definition because of PET scans. We think we can find this sooner. But here you can see a pretty clear spot on that right side there, right? But even more so, I usually like to get an MRI of your prostate, right, just to kind of confirm that spot is real. And then in the setting of patients who have failed, for example, after surgery and have a positive margin, I personally tend to lean this way, but primarily because, as Dr. Carroll and I have chatted about, we can use the MRIs if they're positive after surgery to kind of give a little extra radiation there if we decide to proceed forward with salvage radiation. So that's the kind of the figure on the bottom there. There's a gentleman that's gone through surgery, PSA rose, we kind of waited for it and were more convinced that it was real, so we got an MRI, and that area I've circled there in red was an area that was concerning. And of course, as I think has been discussed, a transrectal ultrasound of the biopsy is always a great idea. I will actually kind of go back to my image on the top. While you think that actually might have been positive, funny enough, when I actually had an alt biopsy, it was negative. It was just benign reactive tissue, right? So just to the point of it is, while images are wonderful, they can be also misleading, right? And then also, I think Dr. Carroll has a wonderful program where we can send patients after surgery for a transrectal ultrasound to look at, you know, local recurrences as well. It's been shown to be very accurate. So this is just more of a treatment case scenario. I thought that would be a little more useful. So, and something I see in my clinic, you know, I would say healthy gentlemen, whether they're young or perhaps even older, but they're quite robust or exercising many times a week, with a PSA roughly of around 0.3, and perhaps his imaging that we just discussed earlier was all negative, right? And this is always a tough case. I think it's a little unsatisfying because you want to know potentially where why your PSA is rising. I always ask about urinary incontinence first. I think that's really, really important because, as I think Dr. Kell mentioned, you know, radiation does can have long-term side effects. So patients who perhaps have some more leakage at baseline, I might try to see if I have a little more time to, you know, hold off on starting on radiotherapy. Perhaps sometimes we can put them on androgen deprivation first and give them a few more months to heal, because that incontinence has a higher risk of becoming permanent, right? So it is important to have that discussion with patients. Assuming it's good, then we'll talk about doing radiation to the surgical bed, and that tends to be over about 6.5 to 7 weeks. Some people ask me, can we shorten this? The answer is, in my opinion, not quite yet. I think there's data and research questions that are actually going to be coming out in the next year or two, looking at safety, especially as you condense radiation. There can be a risk of more early side effects, and so that being said, I kind of want to see that data before I recommend it. I don't think it's so much about the efficacy as it's about the side effects. And some general guidelines, granted, this is not meant to be cookie cutter whatsoever. You know, when patients have a higher PSA, I get, at the time of their salvage, I get a little, what we call salvage radiotherapy. I do get a little more concerned, for example, about the risk of it being in the lymph nodes, right? Especially if they're margin negative, meaning that, well, it really doesn't make sense why their PSAs went up, then maybe there's something hiding in the lymph nodes, right? So I will treat their whole pelvic to radiation to a slightly lower dose. And then when we had androgen deprivation therapies, I started to feel more strong about it when your PSA is above 5, but I will also mention some of the factors that I think Dr. Kell really did a nice job of highlighting. It's not just about the PSA number, it's about the clinical presentation. So patients with more aggressive Gleason scores, shorter PSA doubling time, these more extra prostatic, or we call it seminal vesicle involvement, make me kind of tilt my hand towards considering more aggressive treatment as well, such as hormone therapy at even an earlier PSA. And then sometimes we have genomic classifiers and AI pathology. I think we talked about Artera and Decipher throughout all of this, and I think that's really made an impact of how I think about especially the androgen deprivation piece of the question. And then how soon do I offer radiation, right? And this is it's not meant to be numerically based, just to be very clear. It's all about the clinical scenario. So, you know, usually somewhere I prefer around 0.2 to 0.4, but it has to be rising. And this is, again, a very in-depth discussion I have with my colleagues such as Dr. Carroll, and making sure that we really think that the utility there is very high. I just showed here what a salvage radiation therapy plan after surgery looks like. And so here you can kind of see in multiple images or multiple views that the area in red is the kind of post-surgical zone that we classically radiate. So we kind of, if you imagine on the side profile there, the image to the bottom left, it looks kind of like a toilet bowl seat almost, right? And then to a lower dose, and that kind of lighter blue up there is how we actually treat the pelvic lymph node in spaces that are at risk, right? And again, really taking away, if you look again at that bottom left figure, the rectum, which is behind it, has done a very nice job of sparing it, right? Because we do really try our best to reduce the amount of rectal dose and bladder dose, so we're really pushing off in the bladder, which is right above it, right? And that's just because the technology, as discussed earlier this morning, has really come a very long way. No, some other scenarios like after surgery, and I think scenario two, some like scenario one is, you know, a patient who has a positive pelvic lymph node, right? And honestly, the radiation design that I just showed you doesn't change a whole lot. But what does change is I give a little extra dose to that positive pelvic lymph node throughout the 6.5, 7 weeks. And then I loop my medical oncology colleagues to discuss, you know, more robust hormone therapy, which I think will be discussed later this afternoon. And then scenario three is, you know, someone with limited life expectancy, and by that I mean like somewhere between 5 to 10 years life expectancy. And then, you know, sometimes I think about just treating the lymph node that's positive, right? And really not knowing what the utility of prostate bed radiation there is necessarily. So you're gonna have to have a pretty pro and con discussion with every patient in the team. Now, how about failures after radiation, right? So I think that's a kind of a different animal, but I would say usually I tell patients, what I usually refer to is Dr. Joe Shu, who was earlier this morning, has become quite the expert at treating these, and so we send them to brachytherapy. It's usually done over 2 sessions, about 1 week apart, and I just put up our published institutional experience, knowing that PSA controls at 5 year being quite robust, around 70%, with minimal, or at least I'd say less than 10% of, you know, like severe urinary toxicity. SBRT is an option in select patients, and I've done a few handful cases myself, as I am not a brachytherapist. Another non-radiation options that I think Dr. Cooperberg covered really nicely this morning. And then, you know, Dr. Carroll had mentioned earlier about, like, there are some that you might just want to observe, right, after surgery that perhaps their PSA is floating and stable. Well, it's definitely an option in the post-radiation setting. I've had guys where we biopsied them and their Gleason score is 3+3 or 3+4 and their PSA isn't doing much. Well, especially if they're maybe not as healthy, something you can think about. All right, well, this is my ending slide, but I think what I hope to show today is, you know, the risk factors for local recurrence in particular can be similar, whether it's local extension of your tumor, your Gleason score, and sometimes, again, more surgery-specific, your positive margin. We talked about, you know, the importance of having a complete and extensive imaging option or evaluation, as well as clinical evaluation, long life expectancy, longevity, as well as getting a biopsy. And then obviously, I think the big picture is each treatment is tailored to the patient, right, and kind of all their factors put together. But with that being said, thanks so much for taking the time to listen, and I appreciate it.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.